Most people, when they think of Jesus, think of a gentle and kind man. And certainly, as he moved upon this earth, he was certainly that. And would often describe himself as such. For example, in this text in Matthew 11, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle," or meek, "and lowly in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." You think about Jesus, and I picture one, as I'm sure you do, as one who, as even Scripture indicates, welcomed children. I love Matthew 19, 13 and 14. "Little children were brought to him that he might put his hands on them and pray. And the disciples thought that this would be a bother to him, but then Jesus rebuked his disciples and said, 'Let the little children come to me. Do not forbid them, for of such is the kingdom of heaven.'" I remember seeing some drawings of Jesus holding children and laughing with them, and I thought, yes, that's the way I believe that he was. But if our image is of Jesus only in these senses, we don't have the full picture of Jesus. In fact, in our text in John chapter 2, we have a very different picture of Jesus. And let's read together in John chapter 2, beginning with verse 13. John 2, beginning with verse 13. "Now the Passover of the Jews was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. And he found in the temple those who sold oxen and sheep and doves, and the money changers doing business. When he had made a whip of cords, he drove them all out of the temple with the sheep and the oxen, and poured out the changers' money and overturned the tables. And he said to those who sold doves, 'Take these things away. Do not make my Father's house a house of merchandise.' Then his disciples remembered that it was written, 'Zeal for your house has eaten me up.'" This is not a meek and mild Jesus, is it? Many would call his response here righteous indignation. But as the title of the lesson suggests, the title I gave it is "When God Got Mad." Jesus is angry. He's demonstrating anger toward what is happening in the temple. And I'd like for us to explore together why Jesus was angry on this occasion and what lessons we can draw from it. Notice, first of all, the occasion. The occasion was the Passover. The Passover of the Jews was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. You'll remember the Passover was one of those annual Jewish feasts where perhaps some estimate some 2.5 million Jews may have been in Jerusalem on such occasions. In fact, this was one of the primary feasts that Jews, even though they were scattered throughout the world, many of them had a desire to at least go to Jerusalem one time to celebrate the Passover. And so many, including Jesus, has gone to Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover, to commemorate how God had delivered the people of Israel out of Egyptian bondage. And namely, that 10th plague that finally caused Pharaoh to allow Moses to lead the people of Israel out of Egypt. That 10th plague, the death of the firstborn, where the people of Israel that were obedient to God's instructions and took that blood of a lamb and put it on the doorposts and lintel of their homes, they were protected. And this Passover feast was instituted to remind them of what God had done, how he had delivered them and had demonstrated his power on that occasion. And the Israelites, the Jews, were instructed to keep this feast and to remind generations to come of what God had done. And so these Jews were scattered all over the world, but they never forgot their ancestral faith, their ancestral land. And again, so many had come to Jerusalem on this occasion to partake in this feast. And it's in that setting that Jesus does this amazing thing. Notice the occurrence on this occasion. John 2:14, he found in the temple those who sold oxen and sheep and doves, and the money changers doing business. A couple of things I want to point out in that. Let's talk first of all about the money changers doing business. This would have been in the court of the Gentiles, the exterior court, where the Gentiles could go and no further. But they'd set up these tables and were selling things. We'll come back to that in a moment. But there were these money changers. Why money changers? Was it just to take in the money for the doves and the sheep and so forth that were being purchased? There's more to it than that. You see, there was a tax that every Jew over 19 years of age had to pay. It was the temple tax. It was necessary that all should pay that tax so that the temple sacrifices and the temple ritual might be carried out day by day. But why money changers? Well, if these Jews came from all over the world, they'd have different currency. But only certain types of currency, the Galilean shekels or shekels of the sanctuary, would be accepted into the treasury. And so if you were a Jew and you traveled back to Jerusalem to participate in this annual feast and yes, pay the temple tax, then you would take your currency and exchange it for this acceptable currency. And as you might have guessed, these money changers would have a little interest attached. And in fact, it could be very exorbitant. And if you'll remember that these sacrifices that were prescribed were often based upon what a person could afford. And so the money that was changing hands here was often there was attached to it this exorbitant interest. And many people were getting rich from it. And there was abuse. So Jesus, thinking about this feast and how now people were taking advantage of people. Verse 15, he made a whip of cords and he drove them all out of the temple with the sheep and the oxen and poured out the changers' money and overturned the tables. This is Jesus. This is the Son of God demonstrating his anger, but it is still righteous indignation. And it reminds us that there are things that should anger us, and there is anger that doesn't lead to sin. Why was he so angry? As we examine the text, I wanted to highlight three answers to that question. Number one, first, they were changing the purpose of the temple. They were changing the purpose of the temple. It was meant to be a place of worship. And the Lord's rebuke reveals the reason for his outburst. He said to those who sold doves, "Take these things away. Do not make my Father's house a house of merchandise." This is inappropriate. This is blasphemous for you people to be out here making money when my Father's house was not intended for this. When the plan for the temple was given by God to Solomon, it was intended to provide a place for people to meet God. It was a place for worship, a place for sacrifice to God. But over the years, it had lost its original purpose. They turned the temple into a house of merchandise. Matthew and Mark record incidents when Jesus cleared the temple, as we're reading here in John chapter 2. In Matthew and Mark, this seemed to be at the beginning or near the end of Jesus' ministry, earthly ministry, whereas in John, it's near the beginning of the book. Some suggest perhaps he did it twice. Others would state that John says, or that John is not written chronologically, so could refer to a single clearing of the temple. Whichever is accurate, I wanted to highlight a passage from Matthew statement of Jesus that Matthew records, he said to them, "It is written, my house shall be called a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of thieves." So they had changed the purpose of the temple. They'd lost sight of what it was really about. And that caused the Lord to be angry. Second, they had made worship a matter of convenience and not sacrifice. They'd made worship a matter of convenience and not sacrifice. And this ties in with the animals that were to be offered for these various sacrifices. You remember one rule that seemed to be true of each animal that was to be brought. It was not to be lame or one of the runts of the litter, if you will, but to be without blemish. It was to be one of the best. But this situation, it goes even deeper than that. As a matter of convenience, they began to sell sheep and doves and oxen. Don't have to worry about bringing it with you. You can just purchase it while you're here. And it wouldn't be necessarily the best that they had to offer. And added to this, people were cheating one another. What enraged Jesus, one person wrote, was that pilgrims to the Passover who could ill afford it were being fleeced at an exorbitant rate by the money changers. It was a rampant and shameless social justice. And what was worse, it was being done in the name of religion. So as a matter of convenience, they sold these oxen and sheep and doves. And added to that, the temple authorities had inspectors. So if you didn't purchase some of those animals that were offered there in the temple court, if you brought one in, you brought a lamb without blemish that you wanted to offer as a sacrifice, there'd be a temple inspector. As you would suspect, and especially in this environment where it's obvious there was corruption, the temple inspector might inspect your sacrifice and say, that's not good enough. You'll have to buy one of these. So you can see how the abuse could be overwhelming here. So poor, humble pilgrims who had made perhaps long journeys to come to Jerusalem were being taken advantage of. Perhaps this is another reason why Jesus demonstrated this righteous anger. It had to be an amazing, perhaps a shocking sight to the disciples. Jesus, who would normally be so calm and could still the storm, now was creating one. And overturning tables and making that whip and driving people out. Imagine all of the scene that was there. And as they saw it, his disciples remembered an Old Testament passage. "Zeal for your house has eaten me up." From Psalm 69 in verse 9. He's eaten up with zeal. He had fervor for God's house. But as you see his response on this occasion amongst this corruption, it does cause us to ask, what about our zeal for the Lord's house? Are we enthusiastic? Do we take the proper stands? When many are losing sight of what the church is all about. Let's make some observations. As we think not about the temple, Herod's temple, when Jesus physically drove out the money changers and those that were trying to make it a den of thieves. Let's talk about the temple today. The Lord's temple today is the church. And not the building, but the church, the people. Ephesians 2 is a text that teaches us this. Now therefore you are no longer strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God, having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom the whole building being joined together grows into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you also are being built together for a dwelling place of God in the Spirit. Paul says to Christians, the church, you are the temple of God, a habitation for the Spirit of God. We must be careful lest we defile God's temple. Paul says this, 1 Corinthians 3, do you not know that you are the temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? If anyone defiles the temple of God, speaking of the church, God will destroy him, for the temple of God is holy, which temple you are. How do we treat the temple? How do we treat the church? Are we guilty of some of the same attitudes and actions, even of missing the point of what God intended for his temple, the church, to be? God has a plan for the church. He wants us to be a family and to have fellowship with each other. He wants us to carry the good news to a lost world. He wants us to reach out to the needy. He wants us to be a worshiping people, worshiping him. But like these people in Jesus' day, we can easily lose sight of our purpose. We can lose our fellowship and stop caring for each other as we should. We can stop reaching out to the lost. We can close our eyes to the needs of others. And we can allow our worship to be routine and drab and not fully engage our hearts in our worship. What can we take home with us from this side of Jesus that we're not really accustomed to seeing? When the Son of God grew angry, I want to leave you with three points. Number one, never forget the priority of God's plan. Jesus says there was a purpose for that temple, and they were missing it. They were abusing it. They were making a den of thieves when it should have been a house of prayer. Let's remember that the church is God's idea, and He has instructed us through His Word as to what the church is to be about. Let's be sure that we don't lose focus. Let's be sure that we don't begin to look at the church as a social club, for example. That it's all about just the social aspect of it. Let's be sure that we don't miss the point and make it something that God never intended. But that remember always that He has directed the church for specific purposes. Number two, let's remember this, the privilege and responsibility of worship. And that in our worship, we need to offer God our very best. Not our leftovers. Not being half-hearted, but our very best in our worship to Him. And thirdly, the priority of prayer. The priority of prayer. I love Jesus' statement here, and it's convicting. He said to them, "It is written, my house shall be called a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of thieves." I remember several years ago, Ross gave me a sermon. Sermon outline of a lesson that he'd heard, South Haven, I believe, in which the preacher spoke about how the early church was a prayerful church. He'd gone through like the book of Acts, and I challenge you to do the same and see that they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship in prayer. And you'll find when the early Christians were persecuted, what did they do? Did they give up? Did they despair? No, they prayed to God for strength, for that He would give them the boldness to continue to proclaim Christ. They were praying, church. When Peter was in prison, they gathered together and they prayed for him. And I love that passage in Acts chapter 12 when they were actually surprised by answered prayer when Peter came knocking on the door. But prayer points out our dependence upon God. And just like that temple in Jesus' day was built to be a house of prayer, I believe God wants His temple, the church, to be a prayerful church, to depend upon Him and to call upon Him often in prayer. 1 Timothy chapter 2. Therefore I exhort first of all, first of importance, that all supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings and all who are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. Then Paul writes, for this is good and acceptable in the sight of God, our Savior. Of primary importance, he's saying, that supplications, prayers, intercessions, giving of thanks be made for all men, for all those in authority. Paul is saying, emphasize that. Make sure that you pray. Make sure the temple of God, the church, is a prayerful church. This is good in the sight of God. When God got mad, I remember reading about a couple of people discussing about Christ. And one of them was saying that, you know, that Jesus, you know, pointed out that He would do things like this. He would demonstrate that righteous indignation. And it's a great study to see those occasions when Jesus would demonstrate what we would call anger. And I'm thinking about Matthew chapter 23 when He would stand toe-to-toe with those Pharisees and scribes and call them to their face, hypocrites. And that was a sort of righteous indignation. And it, I guess you could sum it up by saying it was when people were abusing the things of God, belittling them. And self-righteousness, those were the type of things that angered Jesus. And this person was emphasizing, yes, he was a good and kind person and compassionate. But he was also a man of conviction. And the other person in this conversation was pointing out, no, Jesus was so kind and forgiving and loving. This person couldn't envision Jesus getting upset about anything. And the conversation went back and forth until finally one of them noted, if Jesus was so kind and loving and forgiving, why was He crucified? And the reason He was crucified was, yes, He was so loving. But He was also convicted about doing the will of God, that put Him in harm's way, that caused Him to be a threat to the Jews and who rejected His claims as being the Messiah. And His determination to be exactly what He was and to do the will of God caused Him to be crucified. So yes, He was crucified because of His love. But because also He stood for God. And His example calls us to do the same. to be kind and loving, but to take a stand and be angry about the right kind of things and demonstrate it in the right way. Will you follow Jesus? Will you follow Jesus in being compassionate and kind? But will you also follow Him in taking those stands for God? Perhaps tonight there's one or more that needs to take that stand, to obey the gospel of Jesus. We hope and pray that you'll do so tonight. Perhaps others of us have let our lights be hidden. We've hidden our lights, and we need to get back on track and to take our stand with Him again. If that be the case, if you need to respond to the invitation of Christ, won't you come right now as we stand and sing?